You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells. This week's rugby story is that of a lad who was spotted whilst playing school rugby, as football was his passion as a young man. A great career followed this as he played for Leeds Tykes, Harrogate, Newcastle Falcons, Bath and Worcester. He was recognised with representative honours with Yorkshire, North of England, England Under-21s and the Saxons. A great fella and an absolute gent. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. Tom Biggs. Hi Tom, so how have you been keeping?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Been challenging over COVID, but I'm glad it seems to be coming to an end now.
Yeah, so before we get stuck into your rugby story, mate, where was home for you and who lived with you as a youngster?
Hull was home. I say Hull, I was just outside of Hull in one of the villages called Swanland. Grew up with an elder sister and my mum and dad.
Right, and what type of kid was you growing up, mate?
Very small, very skinny, very ginger, full of energy, I would say. Always running around and wanting to do sports and stuff like that. And used to love film and TV and WWF wrestling.
Yeah, but when it was good, mate, yeah.
Used to love it, absolutely yeah. Love it. Still do now, watching some of the old stuff. It's great.
Yeah, brilliant, mate. So what sports were your cup of tea then as a kid?
I'd play everything, but football was definitely my number one, with the name Biggs and Ryan Giggs starting at Man United. And him being the same position, they used to absolutely love football and Man United. So had all the shirts and stuff like that, and used to play football regularly for school and then for my local side, Hessle Rangers, on a Sunday.
Right, so what, you're a left winger, mate, yeah?
Left wing, yep.
Right, so how was that growing up? Was there any trials involved? And if there was, what was the process for you?
Yeah, I did trials with Leeds and Newcastle. So used to do a training camp midweek at a place called Bawtree for Leeds.
Right.
That was when I was about 13, 14, then had trials with Newcastle at 15. And I think I was 15, I might have been 16, had the option to join Hull City on the YTS, as it was known back then.
Yeah.
But from the trials and stuff, it was so serious, and I was maybe a little bit shy when I was younger. So it wasn't really for me at that stage, and wasn't really sure if I was good enough to make that level.
Okay, mate. So how does football work when you're between, say, the later end of junior school, early end of high school? What is it, just a Sunday, mate, and you train two or three times a week?
Yes, I just used to play the Sunday league stuff. I can't remember if we trained once or twice a week, actually, but
right.
It felt proper, if you know what I mean, when you were younger, like be yeah. Very into it and very serious. And we had a really good team, some really good players, and you know, five-a-side tournaments in the summer and stuff like that. So I used to really enjoy it.
Brilliant, mate. So how did you find the transition into high school, and what high school did you go?
Well, I went to Hymers College in Hull, and then same senior school, Hymers College again. The big difference was that we played football in the junior school, and then It switched to rugby in senior school. So
okay.
It's quite nervous for me, because all my friends used to play rugby for Hull Ionians.
Yeah.
But because I'd never played rugby before, didn't know anything about it really, my family weren't into it. It was it was quite nerve-wracking, like giving up football.
Right. So is that what you had to do? Was it one or the other? Could you not have done both?
I just used to play football on a Sunday still.
Right.
If it was my choice, I wouldn't have played rugby at all. But you had to play sport at school. It wasn't an option.
Yeah. It's crazy to think you'd have, isn't it? Obviously, we'll touch on everything you'd achieved and how well you'd done, but crazy to think you were willing to not even bother.
Yeah, and there were stages later on as well in my career that we'll get into where I wanted to stop playing rugby as well. So
right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so who introduced you to rugby? So it was a school, and was you took to a club, or was it just simply school rugby?
It was simply school rugby, so...
Well, I say simply, it's still tough, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, so yeah. Hymers College was just a rugby school, and we had a you know, really good team, and in our later years, we got to the quarterfinals of the Daily Mail Cup,
right.
And lost to the eventual winners, so we did really well for such a small school, but yeah. If I'm honest, our teachers at school were absolutely fantastic. Couldn't have asked for better teachers to you know, help with rugby and things like that. They're really good. So I still see them around the local area when I'm back and owe a lot to them.
Yeah. And for people that might not know, the listeners, right, the Daily Mail Cup's a big deal in rugby union, isn't it?
It is. It's really, really big thing. You know, played against like proper famous schools or well-known schools like Stonyhurst, Sedbergh, Ampleforth. So yeah, to reach that, you know, quarter final, and we only lost by a point to Oakham, who were the eventual winners. So
right.
It was, you know, did really well, but also very disappointing.
Yeah, and obviously I now know that you found club rugby quite late, but how was no one in your ear, mate, to go and play club rugby? Or would you just left to enjoy it?
A few friends, yeah, because they played for Ionians and they really enjoyed it. But I used to love football too much, and that was what I wanted to do. It was hard to balance it at times, because even when you're young, you do like rugby training and then have to go to football training. So it got quite tough. And then sort of later on, when you start getting involved in, I wouldn't say rebellious years, but, you know, when drinking comes into your life.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, you sort of lose your focus a little bit.
All right, mate. So at what age did people start to notice that despite your love for football, you could actually play a bit of rugby? And was anything ever spoke about signing for anybody?
I think it was under 15s or under 16s I played for Yorkshire.
Yeah.
But we had such like good players in our school team. It was just like, you're an all right player. Nothing more than that, really. So I suppose it was at under 18 level. I started playing for Yorkshire under 18s in the north of England.
Yeah.
Didn't quite make the England under 18 squad, but I suppose it was then where I started getting, I didn't get any bigger, unfortunately, but I started getting a bit better and having like a few better games. And It was still nothing ever thought, I want to do this professionally, and never thought I was even good enough to do it professionally. So that didn't even come into my thinking at that time.
Right. So before we kick on with that, mate, can you just talk us through trials and selection processes? So you've touched on Lancashire, you talk us through that if you can, because people won't understand, because a lot of listeners are probably rugby league fans, mate. Nearly touched on yourself, didn't you? But just talk us through that.
So how it works is you play on your school circuit.
Yeah.
And from that, they have trial matches for Yorkshire. So they'll bring sort of, you know, scouts looking and get the best players from all those schools matches to, you know, create a Yorkshire squad.
Yeah.
And then in that Yorkshire squad, you'll play the other northern region, so Lancashire, Newcastle and Northumberland area.
Yeah.
And then from that, they select a North of England team. And then that North of England team then plays in a tournament against Midlands, South West and South East to then create an England team.
Right.
So that's the process of how it works.
Yeah. And with you touching on being a small, shy lad, how was each phase of that for you? Because it is daunting, isn't it?
It was really daunting. So a lot of the guys had played together at England under 16 age group and things like that. And, you know, some of them are even more so now, just absolutely massive at under 16s. And then under 18s, a lot of them are, you know, full grown men with, you know, massive beards and stuff
mortgages
like that.
Mortgages and tattoos.
Yeah. So it was nerve-wracking, and I don't know what the process is like now, but there was never really much help to make you feel more at ease, if that makes sense. It was very serious and, you know, not very welcoming to people and things like that. So, yeah, it was tough. And again, I wouldn't say it was the most enjoyable, because you've never been away from home, and then you go to like 5-day camps and things like that. So it was a strange experience.
Especially with it being eat, breathe, sleep rugby, and you've come from football, really, haven't you? And,
to be honest, I don't know. I hope it's better now for people, because I'm sure a lot of people would have missed out because they didn't feel comfortable when they arrived and things like that. So I hope it is a better system now in place.
Yeah, probably, mate. And I'm definitely not going to put words in your mouth, but
a lot of them lads probably went through the age grades together, so maybe a bit clicky. And
if, oh yeah, no, absolutely, definitely. Yeah. And it's you know, certainly in rugby union, it's well, yeah, it's all posh people, really, isn't it? So
that's the few people have, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is very different. So yeah,
because they all rock up in the stash they had from the year before, don't they? And all go to the same tables.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, all that stuff. Yeah.
Right. So was it playing for Yorkshire 18s that you were spotted? Was it by a certain someone?
Yeah, so I played for Yorkshire 18s and North of England. Like I say, just missed out on England selection. But I was planning to go to Leeds Metropolitan University to do business studies.
Yeah.
So when it was Leeds Tykes at the time, found out I was going, they just said, would I like to come and play, you know, for their, I think it was under 19 side back then. Nothing like a contract or anything, just come and play for the under-19s while I was at uni. So as soon as I got to Leeds Met, I started playing for Leeds Tykes back then, under-19s. And I think then our games were on, I think they were on a Saturday morning, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then started playing the odd game for the A team as well.
Right. So we've touched on this progression. It's come pretty quick for you. I don't know if you agree with that, but is every step up, are you feeling at a higher level, or are you comfortable?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
I'm comfortable at the under-19s, but then when we started playing for the A team, I remember my first game for Leeds was against Sale, and they had Apollo Perellini playing for Sale.
Yeah.
So I was always a massive rugby league fan watching as I was growing up. So he was playing for Sale. So, you know, that was really exciting to play against someone like that. But again, when I was playing for the A team, it was more like, we're short of numbers, we need someone to fill in. It was never like, we think you're good enough to be selected. So,
and is that how it was a big step up.
Yeah, and still at this stage, so how old will I be? I'm 18, 19. I'm probably weighing just under 70 kilos.
I'm so, still a kid, mate, without being rude at you.
I'm tiny. So never really expected to go much further. And at that time, I did ask Leeds if I could. So they had like academy contracts.
Yeah.
So I did ask if I could go on to an academy contract, just for, a bit of money. And so there was like progression, but they didn't think I was good enough. So they turned me down on that, and I think it was at that stage I decided that I wasn't going to do rugby anymore. So I actually stopped playing for Leeds Tykes altogether and went back to playing football.
Right, and how long did that last for?
That lasted about 4 or 5 months, and then got to a pre-season, and Leeds had loads of injuries, and I was working at a pea factory at the time, just outside of Hull, and sort of said, oh, do you want to come and join in pre-season? Like, we've got loads of injuries, join in with the first team. And I was a bit like, oh, I don't really know, because, again, there was no, like, offer on the table of a contract. Again, it was just sort of making up numbers. And I actually, it sounds daft, but I really enjoyed working at the pea factory. All my mates worked there as well.
Yeah.
So it was good fun. And then, because I was at uni in Leeds, I worked at the cinema in Kirkstall as well.
Right.
Which is where Leeds used to train. But yeah, I agreed to join in. So I was training during the day with Leeds and then working at the cinema in the evening.
Right. So again, it's, you're a mad busy man. You're still studying. You're working. How is all this fitting in? Are you managing to make it happen? Is it easy for you? Or?
To be fair, at the time, yeah, it was. There was no... Was it? Distractions, because back then there's no WhatsApp, there's no Instagram, there's no social media, there's no Netflix, so it just felt normal, like you're doing your training, doing your work, and just sort of just flowing nicely, really. Everything felt great.
Yeah. So when did it get to a stage when Leeds sat you down and put a bit of paper in front of you and asked you
well,
to sign?
Well, it didn't happen for a long time. I actually played 4 games in the Premiership before I signed any contract.
That's madness, that, isn't it?
So I did well in the pre-season games.
Yeah.
And then just got, you know, got, they said, oh, we want to keep you on. So I was actually, I had to register, but at this stage I had no contract. So I didn't sign anything until four games into my, into playing in the Premiership.
That's crazy, that.
So.
Yeah. And how was you finding that? It's.
The first game, I was so nervous. You won't believe how nervous I was. Yeah. Like I say, I was still really, really slight back then and really small. But all the lads in the Leeds team really looked after me. They were really good to me. I think that was a combination of a lot of the lads that had come through the academy previously, or the younger lads, they didn't really like.
Yeah.
So, not to blow my own trumpet, but I think they really liked me. I was sort of good fun to be around, energetic, really polite to them and stuff like that. So all the guys that were already in the first team, you know, mean a lot to me, because they, without them, I wouldn't have, you know, I wouldn't have felt welcome and I wouldn't have done anything. So, and the coaches as well. We had Phil Davis and John Callard as our first team coaches, and they were really good to me.
Right. So, how did that negotiation go, and what's involved when you're talking contracts?
So I did it without an agent, actually, which was probably a bit stupid of me.
Hindsight, mate.
Yeah, but at the time, I was so happy to be there and excited. And it's like, this is the offer. I think I might have managed to nudge them on a little bit, but I think I only signed for, a year, to be honest. I can't really remember, to be honest, but yeah, right. I was just so happy to be doing it. And, you know, like my second game, I scored at Welford Road playing against Martin Johnson and Neil Back and Austin Healy, people like that. And again, back then, rugby wasn't on TV really.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't follow it that closely. So I only knew, like, you know, the big name players. So, a lot of the times, I didn't know the people I was playing against. And afterwards, you'd be like, oh, he's pretty good. It's like, yeah, he's got like 50-odd caps for England and stuff like that. So it was really interesting.
Yeah, well, that's probably to your benefit, though, mate, isn't it?
Yeah,
You can't get overawed and that, can you? So one thing I wouldn't mind asking, mate, is I'm quite sentimental and I've not achieved anything like you've achieved, but I'd have kept like a jersey, a programme. Is that something you're into, or...?
I've got, probably save me, my parents have got every single programme from, my parents have been fantastic. They've never missed one of my games. I've got loads and loads of programmes, old kit, things like that, yeah. So I've got heaps of stuff.
That's brilliant, that, mate. Like little scrapbooks and that.
Yeah. I don't have it out. It's all like in the loft. Sort of. With what happened to me later on in my sort of career, just it's sort of bad memories, really. So
okay.
I'm sure one day I'll dig it out, but at the moment it's just packed away in the loft.
Yeah, no, that's not a problem, mate. So you a loan move come about? Did it to Harrogate, a chance to play, or did you see it as a bit of a kick in the face considering what you've been through with them?
This was right before I played my first game. They wanted to send me. Well, they didn't want to send me. They just said, I spoke to Harrogate because they offered me a bit of money just to play. And I thought socially that'd be great. But yeah, that never transpired.
Right. Okay. And is it something you'd have encouraged a young lad to do off your experience or not?
No, it's not, to be honest. It's not, especially with how it is with the A-League now and stuff like that. I think once a lot of players go away from their club and start doing loan moves, it doesn't work out that well, in my opinion.
Right, so it's as if it's like the end of the road for you sort of thing, maybe.
Yeah, and they don't get looked after. They're having to travel, still train full-time with the club and then do extras with their loan club. So for me, it just doesn't work.
Okay, mate. So that year, though, was a successful year, that first year, mate, wasn't it? So it was Power Gen Cup final, player of the year, top try scorer, and then you'd end up playing international rugby. So just talk us through what memories you'd have of that.
It was a nerve-wracking because we were, you know, even though we won the Power Gen Cup, we were struggling at the bottom of the league. So it was just that, you know, to play in the Power Gen Cup final was just, and to win it, because that was also the last year the Power Gen Cup was like the FA Cup, if you know what I mean. After that year, it changed to the LD Cup, where the Welsh teams came into it.
And a lot of academy players in it.
And people stopped taking it seriously. Whereas that year was like the last sort of big one with, you know, teams went full on into it and wanted to win. So to beat a team like Bath in the final, who'd won it so many times, and proper against the odds and all the rest of it, was just unbelievable. And going into the final, I didn't expect to be even on the bench. So to be told I was starting, it was absolutely fantastic. And it's strange. Obviously, I know I did it, and I've seen pictures, but it's hard to describe the feeling and how it was back then.
Yeah. And was you always on the wing, mate? Because your ability, you could have easily played 12 or 13, couldn't you? Depending on whatever role they wanted you to play.
I could have played 15. I don't think I had the handling ability for the centres, but I used to play fullback more. And in that final, I played majority of the game at fullback. Ian Bolshaw got injured early. He was our captain.
Yeah.
But I used to enjoy playing fullback and should have maybe stuck at it a bit more. But yeah, primarily on the wing.
Yeah, with like broken field, more your thing, isn't it? A bit of footwork and
a
chance to do something. So, player of the year that year as well, Tom, and top try scorer.
I'll take it. I can't remember.
But you can't remember. Yeah. I'll
take it though. Yeah. All right. Thanks. It was a crazy season, and we had some good results towards the back end. Like, remember we beat Leicester we beat Leicester on the 27th of March. So it was my dad's birthday, and I scored a try in that game.
Nice present.
So it's little things like that I remember. Yeah. And staying up was a big thing, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, so it was a brutal introduction to professional rugby, mate, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you played international rugby?
I can't remember if I did Saxons that year or the following year. Again, it's talking like almost 20 years ago. So, did a bit of Saxons and Sevens, but,
And how did you find Sevens? Is it an hard transition, Tom?
It was for me to begin with, because my fitness wasn't the best. So it was a tough transition, but once got the hang of it, absolutely loved it. And obviously you go and play in some amazing places. So some of the places that I was lucky enough to go to and play at the stadiums that you play in, and still friends with all those guys I play Sevens with now, and the coaches, Russell Earnshaw and Ben Ryan, who've gone on to do really good things.
Yeah.
It was just such a fun time. And again, going back, this was like at times where I didn't really know much about travel, and it wasn't, you know, a big thing to me. But then, you know, going to these places just really opened your eyes. Like, I went to Hong Kong, San Diego, Wellington. So all over to play in these, you know, amazing places that I'd never dreamed of making it to was unbelievable.
Right. And are you starting, how's your attitude towards rugby starting to look? Are you now thinking that you are capable, because you were unsure to begin with and you got messed about a little bit, mate?
Really? Yeah. It just sort of went easily, but it seemed to have gone easily back then. Just didn't really used to think about it so much. Maybe a good thing being younger, you don't think about things so much, and you're just, you know, you're just happy to go with the flow. So yeah, back then everything just seemed really, really, you know, easy.
For all the latest regarding Trot the Egging, please add John Hetherington on Facebook, at John Heth, H-E-T-H, on Twitter, at Trot the Egging on Twitter, and trot_the_egg_in on Instagram.
The move to Newcastle then, Tom. So how did that come about? And was anyone else sniffing around you at that time?
So that was a strange move, because in my last year with Leeds, I didn't want to be there.
Right.
So I'd signed the contract 3 years prior and said, oh, look, if we get relegated again, I won't want to stay. And they said, oh, yeah, we wouldn't expect you to stay. And then that didn't transpire. Okay. And had a few clubs come in offering like transfer fees and stuff like that. And Leeds were pretty firm and said, no, we're not letting you go. And they let other players go as well at that time. And I felt really harshly treated. And I found it a real struggle. So that was the year that I did my first year on the Sevens circuit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the best year of my life, but also one of the most difficult because I moved back to Hull and was travelling to Leeds every day just because, you know, I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
And I sort of said, oh, after this year, I'm done with rugby. I don't want to do it anymore just because of how I was feeling.
Yeah.
And, you know, season ended. I didn't have a club to go to. Okay. And I was on a stag do in Magaluf, actually, my agent called and sort of said, oh, do you want to sign for Newcastle? And I was like, oh, mate, I think I'm done. I just, you know, I wasn't feeling, you know, horrendous or anything like that. I was just like, I don't really know if I want to do it. And spoke to them at Newcastle and thought, right, I'll do it. I'll do a year at Newcastle because I knew people there and obviously a great club.
Yeah.
And I went and, if I'm honest, I absolutely loved it. Loved the place, loved the club, the other players that we had, Carl Heyman, people like that, who were just, you know, world-class players. And made some lifelong friends there. So like Mickey Young, Alex Tate, it was absolutely fantastic.
So talk us through that year, the standout bits, if you can remember it, mate. And
standout bits, we had a really good game against Sale towards the back end of the season. A really good atmosphere because Sale were close to relegation and we won that game, meaning we were safe to stay up.
Right.
And we had some really good European trips as well, like to Venice and places like that. So it was a really, really good year. Really enjoyed it. And just Newcastle, just a great place to be, like great place to live.
Yeah.
Just an amazing city. And the people are so friendly. I know everyone says it, but they really are.
No, they are, yeah. They're good Geordies.
Really friendly. And it's a shame that it was only a year, but I just got an opportunity to go to Bath pretty early on. I got offered pretty early on in my time at Newcastle because I'd had a couple of good games against Bath.
Right.
So, you know, did feel, you know, a little bit bad because obviously Newcastle had really looked after me, but I just couldn't turn down a club like Bath, to be honest.
Yeah. So before we touch on signing for Bath, mate, do you know when you're down that bottom end, and as much cliche as players say, oh, we're just thinking of the next game, and that, does it affect the whole environment that you're under that type of pressure?
Yeah, it does. You're looking at the fixture list ahead of you and you're thinking, right, if we get a win here, then we might get pick up a couple of points away at this place, and they've got them, they might lose. So for me, yeah, I definitely used to think about it and look at it. And not at Newcastle, but having previous times, like when we've had tough games away or whatever, we'd send, it sounds terrible to say it, send the bomb squad in. So
yeah,
not confident you get results. So what's the point of fielding, you know, a full strength team where you could have a bit of a rest? So I think teams definitely do look at it. And stuff like that. But the most fun thing in Newcastle was that my next door neighbour was Gazza, so that made it quite enjoyable.
Yeah. That's mad, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the environment does feel the tension then, mate, yeah, and training gets a bit more
feistier
and stuff.
It does, and you know when you're against those teams close to the bottom, you're going to be scrapping a bit more and it's going to be tighter and tense and, you know, people are going to make a few more mistakes and things like that. So, yeah, you're definitely aware of it.
Yeah. So, signing for Bath then, did that happen? Is there like a negotiation period that you can't really talk to people beforehand, or was you allowed to talk?
Yeah, there is. So, it's got to be after, back then it was after Christmas. I think if clubs are like sort of cool with it and you get permission, it's all right. But, yeah, it was after Christmas. But it was a real strange one because I went down to Bath to meet the head coach at the time, who was Steve Meehan, and their chief executive, who was a bloke called Nick Blofeld.
Yeah.
And this was on the back of, you know, Bath were in serious trouble for the cocaine scandal.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff of that nature. So I was actually staying in a hotel in Bath, and of all the times, Mickey Young's parents, who I know really well, were there at the hotel, and they were like, what are you doing here? So I'm like stuttering my way through because I hadn't told anyone.
Yeah.
But went to meet Nick and Steve, and back then, so in the summer prior, I'd been on a Saxons tour, which was very heavily drink orientated for everyone, not just myself. And being from Leeds, I used to go out a lot. But at this stage, I wasn't drinking much because I had to get fitter for the sevens. So I'd sort of calmed my drinking down.
Yeah.
Not that I was ever, you know,
yeah,
any bad. But sort of said, oh, look, our concerns on signing you are that you go out. We've heard you go out drinking a lot and you like to party and stuff like that. And that was unfair because everyone was doing the same on the Saxons thing. This yeah. Saxons trip, it's called the Churchill Cup Tour.
Right.
So we did Ottawa, Toronto and Chicago for a month. It was absolutely, you know, fantastic. And we won it quite easily. So it was off the back of that. And they said, look, we've got concerns about signing you because, you know, I've heard you like a drink and blah, blah, blah. So, and obviously off the back of this cocaine thing, they wanted to, you know, sort of put that behind them. So I sort of said, oh, look, when we start, I come down, I promise you, I won't drink in the season. I'll just, you know, I'll leave it at that. I mean, and it wasn't in my contract or anything like that, but I did stick to that agreement. So, yeah, it's strange to think that now because I'm completely teetotal now.
Okay.
So it's strange that I was once put in that sort of situation.
Do you reckon they used it as a bit of a bargaining tool, mate? You know,
I don't think so, no. I think they were just so stressed about the current situation. I mean, at that time, they'd slumped really low in the league as well compared to where they used to be. I mean, they made a comeback at the end of the season, made the playoffs. But, I think they were just keen to put that behind them.
Right. So let's chat about your spell at Bath, mate. What do you remember of that? And was it something you thoroughly enjoyed and you've well and truly got your love for rugby back now?
Yeah, just to be in, well, first of all, it was a challenge. So I'd only lived in Leeds and Newcastle before, which are real busy cities. And then to go down to Bath, which is such a beautiful place, but there's not an awful lot happening in an evening.
Yeah.
So it's quite strange to get around that, but soon adapted really easily and absolutely loved the place. And to be playing in front of sort of, I think the capacity was maybe around 14,000 back then. But obviously the crowd are, I don't know if you've ever been, the crowd are right on top of you. And it's right in the middle of the city, like right in the centre. I used to live pretty much next to the stadium. So to be part of all that. And again, like the players that, you know, they had there, Butch James, they'd signed Lewis Moody, Ollie Barkley, Nick Abendon and Matt Banahan. You know, Francois Lowe came in, Stephen Donald came in after he won the World Cup.
Yeah.
Dave Flatman, Duncan Bell, you know, Dave Atwood, just endless sort of world-class players coming in. George Ford, Kyle Eastmond, just, you know, out of this world to be playing with those types of people.
Yeah. And are you starting to see that as much as the cocaine thing did damage Bath, they're on the way up with them sorts of signings and them?
Yeah, definitely. I think that cocaine thing was a blip and unfortunate by, you know, some players, but people make mistakes, don't they? So
yeah, of course.
You've got to move on, but yeah, it was just, and we moved to the training base to a place called Farley House, which again, it looks like Hogwarts from Harry Potter. So to have the facilities there and stuff like that, it was just, you know, absolutely fantastic. And again, you know, lifelong friends that I made at the club.
Right. So with that type of talent inside you, mate, even it's still, you've still got work to do in finishing stuff off, but was it a bit easier? Is it, how is it? Because you'll notice personnel change, won't you? And your role sort of change with who's inside you, won't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think weirdly though, with all those players, the biggest influence for me was Brad Davis. He was our defence coach.
Yeah.
Who's obviously, you know, Cass Tigers legend.
That's it.
And he did, you know, can never thank him enough for the work that he did for me personally. Because I wasn't really much of a defender before I turned up at Bath, and Brad was just brilliant with me. He was, you know, very harsh, but it worked. And whenever I saw him, I'd always say, mate, I've just got to say thanks so much for all the help you gave me. But he always thinks I'm taking the piss out of him. But he was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Was the rugby league influence starting to come in back then, but not as heavy as it is now, wasn't it? It's them names.
To be fair, it was always quite heavy. I mean, at Leeds we had Simon Middleton, who's now coaches England women, but again, his background was predominantly rugby league. We didn't do much with the Rhinos when I was at Leeds. There was a big rugby league influence. And obviously Mike Ford came in as a coach who you know, all his plays that we did were rugby league plays. But if you look at most clubs in the Premiership, I'd say majority of their defence coaches are all rugby league coaches.
They were
at that point, because Sean Edwards had such a massive impact, not just at Wasp, but on the game as a whole, that everyone just switched to, oh, we need a rugby league coach. And that's still the thing now. Rugby union will, you know, chuck a load of money at people who've played rugby league, even if they're, you know, not much of a coach.
Yeah, no, well, if, like, you know a bit of rugby league, obviously, don't you, mate? And they still play out the back with a lead runner all the time, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very league-esque. Yeah.
So, when the time at Bath come to an end, was it mutual?
So I was really disappointed on a few occasions at Bath to not get called up to the full England squad. Was told it was going to happen, kept being in the Saxons, are you going to be called up for the next England squad? And sort of kept getting that message and it just never came. And then on one of the summer tours, they said, oh, we're not going to call you up to the squad, but you'll still be in the Saxons when the season restarts. And then when the season restarted, they said, we're not keeping you in the Saxons. So I was really, really pissed off, would be an understatement. This is ridiculous. And I went to see Bath and was like, look, I've got a year left on my contract. What do you want to do? Do you want to, you know, can we extend the contract? What are your thoughts? And they were like, oh, not really in a position at the moment to, you know, extend your contract. So I knew a friend who knew Adam Pearson. So I just said, oh, look, any chance you can get me in touch with Adam, and I'd be keen to see if you can sort out a move to Hull.
Yeah. Right. So just before we touch on that, so do you know when you're in the Saxons, mate, is everything built up to it as it is a clear pathway to the first team, and you're getting them messages as if to say, if you tick these boxes,
you'll
be there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, like that. And like I say, I was in camp a few times with England and things like that. And yeah, it's been a huge disappointment for me that I never did, you know, make that final step.
Yeah. Do you appreciate how well you've done, though? Or does that override it?
That overrides it, if I'm honest. And, and you know, people always say, oh, you did so well and blah, blah, blah. But it's how you feel. And to me, it doesn't. I see it like my whole career as a failure because of it, which I know is a terrible thing to say and to look at. But that's just.
That's how you feel.
That's how I feel and how I see it.
Right. And it's because I've only ever played like local and basically a little bit of county stuff. But is rugby got quite a bit of the false promise the higher you go?
In terms of?
Like you're in the Saxon, you've basically been told that you're there or thereabouts, haven't you?
Yeah.
And then is it like the call-ups and stuff? How did he let you know? Did he pull you in early?
They don't. They just gets announced on a, you know, what was it? What was it back then? BBC Internet,
yeah, like the CFAX and stuff.
And you don't, you know, they won't say for definite. And then, you know, I remember a few times with a few players waiting, like, oh, pretty much they said I'm going to be in. So you're waiting for the squad to come through, then you check it and you're like, all right, I'm not in it.
Right.
So it was hard a couple of times like that when you're waiting to hear and you don't do it.
Surely you just appreciate being pulled to a side and saying, listen, Tom, I know I said this, but A, B, and C, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. Right. I know there's no easy way of, you know, telling people and stuff, but yeah.
You want the honest way, though, mate, don't you?
Yeah.
So the move to Hull, and did you get to have a chat with Adam and have a look round?
Yeah, chatted with Adam and had a contract signed, but we didn't have a start date. And Bath wouldn't let me go mid-season, it was tough because Bath had been so good for me and I loved it. But I was like, can't you let me go? Because this is going to be good for me. You don't want me beyond this year. But I was quite big, like off the pitch as well. Like quite a big personality. And Hull at the time wanted me to just, you know, walk away from Bath, which I didn't want to do because I had such a good relationship with them for a start. And secondly, it came down to, unfortunately, it was finances as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, salaries in union are a lot bigger. And Hull at one stage wanted me to start my contract maybe in like, I think it was like December time, and that would mean like going without pay for, you know, a few months and then being on less pay anyway. And then they wanted me to scrap the first year of my contract because coming from union, my first year salary doesn't count towards the salary cap.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a reason to delay it. And I'd been to like, I'd met Radders a few times, and I'd been to the first day of pre-season, got all my kit, had a squad number assigned, which was 25 because of both the numbers for the wingers.
Yeah.
Had all the playbooks, had friends, got shirts printed, you know, posters up in Hull City Centre of me and stuff like that. So for it to not happen was a, you know, really, yeah, massive disappointment. I still find that tough today. So obviously when I'm about in Hull and you walk past the Hull shop, or, you know, had my booster jabs at the KC Stadium.
Yeah.
Things like that. I think sometimes don't appreciate the impact, you know, that's had on me.
No, I didn't, and neither will they, I suppose, will they? So what did it ultimately come down to, mate, that Bath weren't willing to do the business?
Yeah, I couldn't get an early release from Bath, and I wasn't willing to give up, you know, the financial side to step from rugby union to rugby league.
That's fair enough, mate.
It came down to.
Yeah, it's got to be right for everybody, including yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, so the move to Worcester come about, and was any other rugby union side made aware of your circumstance?
Yeah, Bath wanted to re-sign me then at this point when they found out Hull had fallen through, which I was very tempted to do. But then came to the weekend, I'd been training and, like, you know, putting my all in, even though I was going through a difficult thing. And then they selected someone who'd been out injured for like 2 or 3 months. And I just said, I love it here, but I want to play. I don't want to be, you know, a bit part player.
Yeah.
So I just said, that's not going to work for me. And Worcester, one of the teams that came in, and it was a, you know, spoke to Dean Ryan. Worcester were going through the troubles and stuff like that, but he sort of showed the most interest and was most keen for me to play and to be a big part of them moving forward. So went to Worcester and absolutely loved my time at Worcester. Again, it was fantastic because I'd, you know, been, you know, disappointed, and it's little things like often think, you know, I'm not one for things happen for a reason, but, you know, met some people that, if I hadn't gone to Worcester, you know, would never have met in my life. So things like that.
Yeah. Right. So I think everything does happen for a reason, mate. I am one of them people.
Okay.
You've certainly been through it, mate. So you deserved to meet them types of people and to start enjoying your rugby again. It seems maybe people have, because you come across really pleasant.
Yeah.
And really, by no means am I being disrespectful to you, I think they probably took advantage of the fact that if you are at a club, you're 100% at the club.
Yeah, I think so. And that's, you know, probably one of my biggest weaknesses. I'm always quite forgiving of people and put stuff behind me. Where looking back now, there were times where I should have been more difficult in that situation and things like that. But again, it's hindsight, and it's not really in my nature. So, yeah, I mean, it's lessons learned, isn't it? So
yeah, of course it is, mate.
Yeah, so it's the way it goes.
And how was the spell at Worcester then?
Oh, it was great. Got promoted in our first season, which was really good. I mean, the final game against Bristol, if you've never seen it, watch the highlights on YouTube, you won't believe it. Unbelievable. I want to say 15 points down with 10 minutes left, and we ended up winning. Sealed promotion. So, yeah, absolutely fantastic. Again, the facilities at Six Ways are unbelievable. Loved living there. Made a load of mates. And then the second season, we secured our position in the Premiership. So stayed up, which was, you know, a really good achievement. Again, had players like Donoghue O'Callaghan, Vinand Olafia, Francois Hougard came in. So, again, playing with sort of world-class players. And then it was just unfortunate that I got an injury that, you know, ultimately ended my career.
And how had you been with injuries before that?
I had a tiny shoulder injury when I was about 20 years old. But other than that, I'd never had an injury. I'd had nothing. So,
And what was the injury, mate?
So I ruptured my deltoid ligament in my ankle. and did a bit of damage to my tib and fib. But the problem was that the first diagnosis was wrong, and I had quite a lot of bone fragments in my ankle. And on the first scan, it didn't show that I'd ruptured my ankle ligament. So carried on sort of trying to train on it and play with it when it was obviously just doing myself more and more damage.
Yeah. Right. So how did you, before we touch on the decision to call it a day, mate, so that was the first time you played in the Championship, wasn't it?
I played in the Championship with Leeds as well.
With Leeds. So
yeah.
How did you find going back to that level?
It's tough because ultimately it's harder to get up for. And I know that sounds terrible. When there's less of a crowd and the conditions aren't as good, it's hard mentally to get up for it. So it was a challenge a lot of the games.
Yeah, but it's not terrible, it's honest, mate, isn't it?
But we got through it, and that was the main thing. So,
yeah. You
know, in that season, I wouldn't really say anyone for us had a particularly good season.
Yeah.
But we had a few guys that really stood up in the finals two legs, and, you know, a lot of guys really came to the front in that thing. But, yeah, I think it's a difficult season for those sort of well-known players who are used to the big stage. It's hard mentally. And I know for people, you know, who haven't played, it's sometimes hard to understand that. It's like when we used to play against teams with internationals, when they were coming off the back of an international fixture, we'd always target them because you knew, you know, they played 80,000 at Twickenham the week before. So, you know, it sounds mad, but they're not going to be up for it playing on a Friday night in front of 8,000 people.
No, it's difficult emotionally to get back up there, isn't it?
So, we'd always target the internationals the week following a game.
Right. So how did you take the decision to retire, mate? And
It was really tough. It was one, so I had sort of a year sort of not knowing if I could get through in a couple of goes at reconstruction. And again, it's hard to explain to people what it's like, because you just feel like you're just like sort of, you're going in, you know, picking up a check, and everyone's asking you, oh, what's going on now? And didn't really know what was going to happen. And it's really dark. It was a really dark time, to be honest, because you're not part of the squad. You're not part of the team. You've got nothing on a weekend. Also, like, I was in absolute agony for most of the year after the operations and the pain of it. So you're on crutches most of the time. So you're relying on people driving you about. It's hard to, like, get your shopping in. Like, even things like, you know, having a bath or a shower is, like, really, really challenging.
Yeah, the daft things.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, people were great with me. Like, oh, do you want us to come round and watch TV? But I was very much like, oh, I just want to be, you know, on my own type thing.
Yeah.
Because obviously they'd come and they're talking about the game and stuff like that, and you don't want to hear it. So I did isolate myself a lot, which was probably a bad thing in hindsight, but it was just my way of dealing with it.
Yeah. We all have different ways. You just didn't want the constant reminder, did you? So what have you been up to since retiring then, Tom?
So since retiring, I've started off doing personal training in Singapore.
Yeah.
So while I was out there, I was able to travel quite a lot, which was absolutely fantastic. This was pre-COVID, obviously. So it was easy on a weekend in Singapore. You just jump on a plane to Bali or Thailand or Cambodia. So managed to see some amazing places and absolutely loved it. But sort of the personal training probably wasn't for me in terms of the time on the floor. So since then, I've been doing property investment, commercial property, and I'm just getting back involved with personal training, doing it in an online format. So doing a bit of everything at the moment. Still not sure, you know, what's going to be my final sort of life decision. Looked at all sorts during COVID, was all set to do my commercial pilot's license, but then pulled out of that last minute with how the pandemic went and stuff like that. Interesting time during COVID when you're got not really a set decision on what you want to do with your life, but it's exciting.
Fair enough. And before we go on to the further daft questions and things, mate, do you get invited back to the clubs, and do you manage to meet up with the old boys and stuff?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we get invited back a lot and it's obviously easy now to stay in contact with old friends and teammates, but I've actually, I've never been back to a rugby stadium or watched a game of rugby live since I finished. I've tried to watch on TV a few times, but I find it really difficult. So, I'm sure I will make it back at some point. But, I've not actually been back to any clubs or any stadiums.
Right, and so staying in the game isn't the avenue you'd like to have a look at?
In the right situation, I'd love to, yeah. It's just not sure what would be the right one for me at the moment. Like, obviously, got a lot of friends who are really high up in coaching and doing really well, but just thinking about being back on those freezing cold fields. And also, the big thing is giving up. I gave up weekends my whole life up until the age of 33, 34. So to give up weekends, I'm just not sure I'd be willing to do it. But I suppose some of those lads are getting paid an absolute fortune, so that's why they're willing to do it.
Yeah, no, fans don't understand the sacrifice, mate, did he?
Yeah, no, especially now, I always find it, I mean, I haven't got kids myself, but
yeah,
I find that my friends who've got kids, I think, oh, how can you, like, you know, now their daughters and sons are starting to play sport on a weekend. Like, I'd always be absolutely gutted if my dad couldn't make it because he was watching somewhere else or whatever. So I think that must be a really hard thing to do. But like I say, I suppose the big thing is the financial thing is a massive thing.
Just a quick reminder that Boydell Sports are our sponsors here at Trot the Egg In. So if you go down to their flagship store in West Bank and quote Trot the Egg In, you'll get a free stud and a 1% discount.
It's that daft time, mate, where I ask you some silly questions. So any pre-match superstitions?
No, I didn't have any. That was one thing early on in my career. A guy called Colin Rigney said, don't have any pre-match superstitions because it's just something extra that could go wrong.
Right. That's good advice, to be fair, isn't it? So your toughest player you've played with and against?
Oh, toughest player I've played with was probably a bloke called Hondre Fourie at Leeds. He was South African, but he ended up playing for England. So playing with him was good because he was absolutely nails. First player to play against, I mean, I was lucky to play with him as well, was probably Matt Banahan. Because he was just horrible to tackle. Horrible.
So, favourite away ground?
Oh, I used to love playing at Majeski. Where London Irish played.
Yeah.
But I'd have to say King's Home just because of the atmosphere.
Right, a nice little rivalry for you as well.
But the crowd there, it was awesome.
Right, so back when you used to have a beer, mate, or even now if it's something you'd enjoy, but if you're out with the lads, mate, and the microphone ends up in your hand, what karaoke song are you giving us?
I used to be really good at Lionel Richie, Hello.
Yeah.
Or Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby. But I've not done either in a long time. I think the last one was probably Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, brilliant, mate. So, right, it's that time now. So, you're 1 to 15 that you played with, mate. So, if you just tell me who and a little bit about why, you can start wherever you want to start.
All right, well, I'll start with the props. I never know which way round it is.
Doesn't matter, mate.
So, you got Carl Heyman.
Yeah.
Just because at Newcastle, we just... you know, get a scrum and would, you know, basically get a penalty off the back of it. So, you know, that'd be, you know, happy days. And he was a really nice guy. Good fun to be around, enjoyed his surfing. Hooker would be a guy called Gus Creevy, who I played with at Worcester, who was the Argentina captain. He might still be Argentina captain now, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, just immense around the pitch and all the rest of it. And again, really good fun to be around and very experienced. My other prop, I'm not too sure of. Played with some good characters, but I'd have to go with David Flatman just because he's so good to have around the club.
Yeah.
Don't want to diminish from his playing ability as well, but he's obviously doing well now in his commentary and stuff like that. But he was... really good to play against, you know, such a well-known player. So that was great. Second rows, I've got to go with Danny Grewcock. When I came into Bath, he was just whatever he said went, basically. And he was very well respected. And then I guess, I mean, I didn't play with him, but I'd have to say Martin Johnson. Just because he's Martin Johnson at the end of the day.
And you now know who he is.
he'd be in anyone's team. Back row, at seven. Who would I have at seven? I'd probably go for Francois Lowe, who I played with at Bath. I think he ended up getting maybe close to 80 caps for South Africa, but again, he was absolute nails. And just, really, really good player. Number eight, I'd probably go with, Lawrence Dallaglio from playing against him. Obviously, again, just absolute, legend of a bloke, and so well known in what he achieved with England and Wasps and led them to winning everything. Did it all in the game. So, he'd be my number eight. And then at six, I would go for... Who did I go for at six? I'll come back to six because I've not made a final decision. Nine would be Danny Kerr, just because he's a good friend, but he's also gone and done really well. 10 would be Johnny Wilkinson. Again, done it all and all the rest of it. 11, even though I didn't play against him in his peak, I did play against Jonah Lomu, so he'd have to go in at number 11.
Yeah,
I think. In the centres, I'd have to have Manu Tuilagi. I had to play him against him a few times and was... it's just horrible. Not nice to play against. I'd have Kyle Eastman at 12. Again, just, good friend and great to play with. And it was so exciting that he was going to be a part of Bath when I came down. On the other wing, I'd probably have the other Tuilagi, Alex Tuilagi. I had to play against him a few times. Just an absolute nightmare. Just awful to play against. Absolutely horrendous. And then 15. Who would I have at 15? I'm going to have to go for Nick Abendanon, just because, again, a friend, but he was such a legend at Bath, and he went on to win European Player of the Year when he was at Clermont Auvergne. So
it was a good move for him, that, wasn't it?
Good. And to come off the back and do what he did at Bath and then, back it up. One of those where should he have won more caps for England? Possibly, but Mike Brown was also an excellent player. So it's tough. You can understand. It's different players, and that's why he didn't. So
Right. So have you decided on your six, mate?
On my six, I'm going to go for Gerry Collins. So I played against him when he was at the Ospreys. And again, such a sad passing, but what a player he was for the All Blacks.
You've been listening to Trot the Eggin'. Thanks to our sponsors, Bardell Sports. Follow us on Twitter @TrotTheEggin and Instagram @Trot_the_egg_in.